We have a special premium for first-time donors to Issues Etc. It's the new Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio mousepad. We'll send it to you for your first-time donation to Issues Etc. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also make your first-time gift by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. Thanks for your support.
If you want to deny evolution and live in your world that's completely inconsistent with everything we observe in the universe, that's fine. But don't make your kids do it, because we need them.
How about if we go to Bill Nye and we say, look, you want to believe in a mindless, purposeless goal as evolution, you go ahead and do it. But whatever you do, Bill, don't raise your children that way. Raise them to be Bible-believing Christians and creationists. Now, how far would that go?
Even our confession sucks. And the gracious God in Jesus Christ says, be of good cheer, my son. Your sins are forgiven. Peace be unto you. And all of it based on Christ, not us.
Hi, this is Eric, and I'm a steel worker from Pittsburgh, PA. With some noise reduction headphones and the new iPhone app, I listen to Issues Etc. all day long.
We've been thinking a lot about religious freedom here in the U.S., haven't we? And we fret about it, we worry about it. There are some genuine threats to religious freedom, some of them direct, some of them indirect, and I don't think any thinking religious person would be unconcerned. But this isn't the only place in the world where religious freedom is either being questioned or challenged, even legally. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 5th of September. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is going to join us for the first half hour on this Wednesday afternoon to talk about a case that is before the European Court of Human Rights involving four British Christians who lost their jobs for visibly wearing crosses and other issues of religious freedom in UK. A little bit later, Wendy Wright will join us. Last night's speech at the Democratic National Convention, one of them was given by Nancy Keenan. She's the president of NARAL Pro-Choice America. She had a lot of things to say about both of the candidates for president, but she had a lot of things to say about what she thinks American women really believe. We'll get Wendy Wright's response to that. In the second hour of Issues Etc., we're going to talk about the Apocrypha, that set of books that historically and literarily falls between the Old and New Testaments. It explains some of the history in between, but how are we to regard these writings? Are they sacred writings, sacred with a small s? Are they devotional? Are they mere history? Are they fancy? What should we do with the Apocrypha? Dr. Andrew Steinman will be our guest in hour two of Issues Etc. You can join us for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-6943. You can send us an email with questions or comments, talkback@issuesetc.org, or you can send us a tweet at @issuesetc. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is a regular guest. He's professor emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's distinguished research professor of philosophy and Christian thought at Patrick Henry College, and he's authored and edited more than 50 books, including one of his latest, Christ as Center and Circumference. Dr. Montgomery, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
How would you compare, you've seen both from both sides, how would you compare the state of religious freedom in the U.S. versus the U.K.?
Well, legally, the situation is much more relaxed in the United States, owing to the First Amendment that makes it impossible for the state to create prejudicial legal situations in regard to denominations or individual believing members of a religious group. But of course, in the United States, there are plenty of indirect pressures on believers. For example, from the standpoint of political correctness, people who object to evolution are often isolated, and it becomes virtually impossible to present an anti-evolution creationist position in public schools. This is, you know, most unfortunate, but the pressures are more of an indirect sort. In England, the tradition has been very open, and this has been assisted by the fact that England has a state church. The Anglican Church is the Reformed branch of the Holy Christian faith established in this kingdom, and that has meant that there is a religious instruction in the public schools, and religious symbols are present in public locations without any difficulty at all. Though in recent years, the secularists have become much more of a problem, and these cases before the European Court of Human Rights are an illustration of that.
So tell us about the cases that are all kind of being, at least in the press, they're being treated together as issues of religious liberty in the UK.
Well, there are four cases that have been consolidated before the court, and two of these have to do with the wearing of crosses by public employees. One of the employees is a nurse in the National Health Service. Another is a worker at British Airways. So those two cases are very similar. The other two are also quite similar, but for a different reason. In the third case, there is a Christian registrar who did not want to conduct ceremonies for civil partnerships. In England, it's possible to have homosexual couples appear before a registrar, not, of course, in a church context, but in a secular context, and they go through a ceremony which approximates a wedding ceremony, though it isn't that. It's simply a civil partnership arrangement. And this registrar did not want to do this, and he was therefore suspended and moved into other activities. And the fourth case, which is quite similar to that third one, has to do with a Christian relational counselor who was not willing to give sex instruction to a homosexual couple. And so the common element in these four cases, of course, is whether or not the religious convictions of a person should be able to hurt them in their professional life.
Where did these cases stand right now before the International Court of Human Rights?
The European Court of Human Rights. The situation is that in England, all of these cases were decided against the Christian believers. And a case only gets to the European Court of Human Rights when the domestic remedies have been exhausted. That's the technical expression. This means that the case has to be taken all the way through the national legal system and gets nowhere. And if that's the situation, then the case can be taken to Strasbourg. So these cases, all four of them, are cases where the Christians failed in their legal attempts in the United Kingdom. And therefore, they took their cases to Strasbourg. And Strasbourg, in turn, consolidated the four cases. The cases are similar, but the first two, the wearing of crosses, can be distinguished from the other two quite evidently. And those first two cases are quite interesting because there is, as we've said, a state church in England. And you would think, therefore, that the wearing of a discreet cross at work, even if one is a public employee, would not pose a problem in the slightest. In France, where there is separation of church and state, as there is here in the United States, there is a law against the wearing of what is called ostensible or conspicuous religious symbols or dress, if one is a public employee, or within the public school system. But the French Parliament made very clear that this was only to deal with very egregious exhibitions of a religious position. For example, headscarves or the French or the Muslim burqa. Certainly, it was distinguished entirely from the wearing of a cross or, let's say, a Star of David if one were Jewish. So the irony of this is that in France, where there is separation of church and state, there's absolutely no problem for a public employee wearing a small cross symbol or another symbol of that person's religious position. Whereas in England, they're creating a problem over this. And I'm very much convinced that in regard to those two cases, the European Court of Human Rights will rule that this is state interference going far beyond what it should, and that this use of religious symbols should not be regarded as anything negative at all, and certainly doesn't suggest that the government is promoting that religious position.
With only a minute here, Dr. Montgomery, the other two cases involving people in various occupations who simply, as matters of conscience, don't want to do for, in one case, homosexual couples, what they would otherwise do for any other couple. What are your thoughts there on how the court has stands so far?
Well, there, of course, the court ought to rule that the proper solution is simply to move those people into other activities in their job, not curtail their professional life. You know, in most countries, if, say, a medical person in medical personnel objects to abortion, if a surgeon objects to this or a nurse, they are simply not put on shifts where they would have to engage in that activity or contribute directly to it. But in England, they've been so rigid on this whole business that a relational counselor, for example, was discharged rather than put into a position where he would not have to give sex counseling to homosexual couples.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. We're talking to him about a set of cases before the European Court of Human Rights involving four British Christians who have lost their jobs or in some other way been discriminated against for religious beliefs or practices. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. When we come back, 10 more minutes with him on these cases of religious liberty.
How would you like to win a 4-CD set of 45 Reformation hymns? It's titled Heirs of the Reformation, Treasures of the Singing Church. Now here is how you enter this contest. First, like the Facebook fan page for Lutheran Public Radio, Sacred Music for the World, facebook.com/Lutheran Public Radio. Second, post an invitation for your Facebook friends to listen to Lutheran Public Radio. And third, send the text of your Facebook post and the number of your Facebook friends to contest@issuesetc.org. We'll give away this 4-CD set, Heirs of the Reformation, to the contestant with the best Facebook post and to the contestant with the most number of Facebook friends. We'll announce the winner on Monday, October the 1st. Participate in a Facebook contest for Lutheran Public Radio during the month of September.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. The Lutheran Church of the Good Shepherd in Greenville, South Carolina. St. Paul Lutheran, Chatfield, Minnesota. St. John Lutheran, Napoleon, Ohio. First Lutheran, Lufkin, Texas. Concordia Lutheran, Sykeston, Missouri. Hope Lutheran, Granite City, Illinois, Trinity Lutheran, Gladson, Alabama, and Lord of Life Lutheran, Chesterfield, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. Journal, issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300. We're talking about a case before the European Court of Human Rights involving four British Christians and their religious liberties. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Dr. Montgomery, before we go on, tell us about your latest book, Christ as Center and Circumference.
Well, this has just been published in Germany and is available in the States, and it will shortly be issued in a parallel edition by Whips and Stock. So it'll have a lot more dissemination than it would have otherwise here on this side of the pond. The book is a great big fat book. It's some 650 pages, and it consists of essays and other materials collected together under a number of headings. There is, of course, a strong apologetic section. There's a section on science and faith. There's a section dealing with legal evidence in behalf of the faith. And for listeners who are interested in the Reformation, there are some six essays dealing with the Reformation, particularly the 16th century people, and not just Lutherans. There is an essay dealing with Calvin. There's an essay dealing with the Council of Trent, as well as a very interesting essay that has to do with one of the sons of Martin Luther, Paul Luther, who was a court physician. And then there are essays dealing with literature and art in relation to the faith, and there are a number of short articles which were originally published in the New Oxford Review. These essays deal with particular theological and political and cultural issues at the moment. And then finally, there is a mini encyclopedia of theological topics such as existentialism and natural theology and neo-orthodoxy, process theology, the Trinity, and so on. So there's a lot in this book for everybody. It's a fun book which can be picked up and set down and doesn't require one plowing through 650 pages all at once.
I know that many of our listeners wait with bated breath for the latest from the prolific pen of Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, and here it is. It's called Christ as Center and Circumference. You can find out more about it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Montgomery, to these issues of religious liberty, so in the case, has the court's decision, the European Court of Human Rights, is this decision now final? Is this equivalent to a Supreme Court decision?
Well, the decision hasn't come down yet. The oral arguments were just presented, and it could be a month or so before the court's decision is actually rendered. Once that's rendered, the country involved is, if the decision is in favor of the people who have brought the case, then the country involved is required to accept that decision. And if there is a monetary fine, as it were, levied by the court, then the government has to pay this. And if the law of the country is defective, then the country is obliged to correct any difficulties that the law poses. In this case, if the court favors the Christians, the result of this will be that in England, they will not be able to discharge people in professional activities because of their religious convictions or because of their wearing discreet religious symbols. Of course, Parliament in England could pass laws that would be restrictive, but if they were to do this, then those cases would go right back to Strasbourg and would undoubtedly be ruled upon in the very same way as these. So, in effect, the European Court of Human Rights is a Supreme Court for civil liberties. It's not a Supreme Court in general, but it's a Supreme Court where civil liberties are involved, and it applies to all of those European countries that have ratified the European Convention or Treaty on Human Rights.
What do the bringing of these cases tell you about religious liberty in particular in UK?
Well, when I read for the bar and was called to the bar in England, the judges of greatest impact were all serious Christian believers. Lord Denning, who was Master of the Rolls. He died at 100 years of age and was the president of the Christian Lawyers Fellowship, had a tremendous positive Christian influence. There were several others. Lord Chancellor's was a Christian of very, very serious belief. And the last of the Lord Chancellors, really, before the present Labour government, was Lord Mackay. And I still have contact with Lord Mackay, and he's a Scottish Christian of very strong convictions. So the atmosphere was quite in accord with classical Christianity. But in the last 25 years, there has been a considerable shift in a secular direction. Let me just give you an illustration of this. One of these cases, the one with the Christian relational counselor, when it was decided in the UK, the judge who dealt with this, Lord Justice Laws, said this, and I quote, "In the eye of everyone save the believer, religious faith is necessarily subjective. It lies only in the heart of the believer, who is alone bound by it. No one else is or can be so bound unless by his own free choice. The promulgation of law for the protection of a position held purely on religious grounds cannot therefore be justified. It is irrational as preferring the subjective over the objective." Unquote. So, Lord Justice Laws said that the relational counselor had no right to argue any religious position in court, because this was nothing but subjective. I did a major article on this, which was published in Amicus Curiae, which is the journal of the Society for Advanced Legal Studies, and in this I pointed out that the poor judge didn't seem to realize that this isn't religion versus non-religion. It's two different religious viewpoints. The people who wanted to force him in, the counselor, into giving sex instruction to homosexuals held a religious position of their own, a position that said that homosexual union is perfectly all right. So it was religion versus religion, and the question of irrationality is not to be used at all. But the mere fact that the judge would argue this way shows a considerable shift in perspective on the part of the judiciary in the United Kingdom.
Jan listens in Atlanta with several questions. She says, please ask Dr. Montgomery if there's any documentation about the employee's job performance prior to the litigation, what his involvement in the case is, and whether in the cases he mentions, should Christians seek to change the law, prepare for the consequences of disobedience, or both? And she also asked whether the U.S. is a member of this international court. Let's do it with the last one first. The U.S. is not a member of the European Court of Human Rights.
No, not at all. And the U.S. has avoided even becoming a member of the Inter-American human rights system, where the court sits in Costa Rica. And the reason for this is that the Inter-American Treaty on Human Rights, in its article on right to life, says that human life begins from the moment of conception. And in the Senate, this ratification was refused, and the major reason was that were the U.S. to ratify this and enter that system, the U.S. would be immediately before the court as a defendant because of Roe versus Wade and abortion on demand in the United States.
The other two questions, working our way backward from Janet Atlanta, do you have any personal involvement in any of these cases?
Well, no, I don't. As I think I mentioned, I had contact with a Christian organization that was initially dealing with a couple of these cases. The barrister who was assigned to work on the cases, unfortunately, I had discharged as a junior in the successful cases that I had before the European Court of Human Rights, and I said, I'm sorry, but I just don't think this person is up to it, and for goodness sake, don't let the person argue this before the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg. And so I didn't hear anything from them subsequently, and the people who have argued the cases have been QCs, Queen's Counsels, which of course cost them an arm and a leg. I would have done this for free, and I've had total success at the European Court of Human Rights in the cases that I've argued, but they wanted to do it that way. That's up to them, and I think that the cases are good enough that no matter how badly they're argued, the court will probably go with the Christians for the reasons I've already given. That these religious symbols are not conspicuous, they are perfectly reasonable, anybody working in a situation where his Christian beliefs cause a problem can simply be shifted to work within the same organization, not requiring that.
As far as you know, were any other issues of job performance related to their faith at issue here in these cases?
No, not at all. They had excellent job records. That's one of the reasons why these cases are so good. It would not have been a wise idea to take these cases up if there had been a messy history of job performance.
Does something in the UK law need to be changed as indicated by the bringing of these cases? Dr. Montgomery, about a minute here.
Well, there isn't anything in UK law that would cause the problems for the Christians that have taken place. What's really needed are laws protecting Christians to a greater extent. And the difficulty in England is that there isn't any written constitution. The only thing that is more or less an equivalent of that is the European Convention on Human Rights. But the difficulty there is that it is you've got to go to Strasbourg in order to get problems like this resolved. If the UK had something like our Bill of Rights as part of their law, then that could be a direct protection for people within the UK. But the UK has always operated with an unwritten constitution.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is Professor Emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court of the United States, Distinguished Research Professor of Philosophy and Christian Thought at Patrick Henry College, author and editor of more than 50 books, including Christ as Center and Circumference, and he is also the International Director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, held annually in Strasbourg, France. Check it out under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Montgomery, thank you.
You're very welcome.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time talking with Wendy Wright about last night's speech, especially Nancy Keenan at the Democratic National Convention.
It was the day after Christmas in 1538 when family and friends who were gathered around Luther's table heard him say, "There is no finer gift that a parent can give to a child than an education in the liberal arts." For over 100 years, St. Paul's Lutheran School in Brookfield, Illinois, has been emphasizing the six chief parts and the seven liberal arts, providing classical education in the Lutheran tradition. Visit our website at spbrookfield.org or call 708-485-0650.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The Gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the Church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the Gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you have a student finishing up 8th grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Logia, a journal of Lutheran theology, is a quarterly publication for the Confessional Lutheran, and they have a special 20th anniversary CD. This CD contains every issue of Logia for the last 20 years. It's a PDF file with search capabilities and bookmarks. This special anniversary CD is an excellent addition to your theological library. You can pre-order it for just $40. That's 50 cents per issue. Find out more at logia.org, logia.org.